have to tell you, because sometimes I feel like getting through life is really hard. It just seems like so much of the time I don't really understand quite what's going on. I don't know if anybody else is like that, but I know that I sure am. In 2 Corinthians, and the 5th chapter passage that Nolan read for us, we learn something about the intersection between things that we can see and things that we can't see. Now we're going to talk about that as if it's the physical world and the spiritual world, but as Christians, we have this marvelous blessing to be able to think about that intersection and to be able to understand it better than we could before we became Christians. And as we continue our walk with God, we begin to understand more and more about the relationship between the physical and the spiritual. Probably the time when this intersection is most important to us is whenever we encounter a death. It's always hard. As Christians, we know or we believe that there is something beyond this world. There is something outside of this world. If we were not Christians, if we were not privileged to know about God, then in many ways we would be like the writer of Ecclesiastes when he talks about things that are under the sun and things that are above the sun. If you restrict your life to only what is under the sun, then you can only see a part of the entirety of man's existence. It's kind of like walking down this pathway, and you know that there's something around that corner, but you don't know what it is. So we're going to talk tonight a little bit about what it means to walk by faith, what it means to know a little bit about what's around that corner. And the place we're going to begin, oddly enough, is with a story that we're all familiar with. We're going to begin by looking at what happened when Israel, having come out of Egypt, is given manna and quail by God so that they would not starve in that wilderness that they were crossing. So we're going to read a long passage from Exodus, the 16th chapter, because it's the story of how this whole episode with the manna and the quail begins. So we'll begin in Exodus, the first chapter, or the 16th chapter and the first verse. They set out from Elim. That's one of the towns that they had come to as they left Egypt. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt. So they've been gone now for about a month. I don't know, but I sort of suspect from the way this reading continues that they had probably exhausted all of the food that they took with them when they left Israel. I imagine that when they left, they took some provisions for their journey. I don't know that. That's my assumption, but it just seems to make sense. The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pot of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill us, this whole assembly to kill us with hunger." The Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, at evening you will know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And what are we that you grumble against us? Moses said, this will happen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and bread to the full in the morning. For the Lord hears your grumblings which you grumble against him. And what are we? Your grumblings are not against us, but against the Lord. Moses said to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumblings. It came about, as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the sons of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness. Behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I've heard the grumblings of the sons of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. So it came about at evening that the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew evaporated, behold, on the surface of the wilderness was there a fine flake-like thing, fine as the frost on the ground. When the sons of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? They did not know what it was. Moses said to them, it's the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord commanded. Gather of it every man as much as he should eat. You shall take an omer apiece according to the number of persons each of you has in his tent. Sons of Israel did so. Some gathered much, some gathered a little. When they measured it with an omer, he who had gathered much had no excess. He who had gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered as much as he should eat. Moses said to them, let no man leave any of it until morning. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul. Moses was angry with them. They gathered it morning by morning, every man as much as he should eat, but when the sun grew hot, it would melt. Now on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, then he said to them, this is what the Lord meant. Tomorrow is a Sabbath observance, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake, boil what you will boil, and all that is left put aside to be kept until the morning. So they put it aside until morning as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul, or was there any worm in it. And Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you'll gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath day, there will be none. And it came about on the Sabbath day, or on the seventh day, that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. The Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my institutions? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. The house of Israel named it manna. It was like coriander seed. And that's what a picture of coriander seed looks like. I have no idea what coriander seed is. I've seen it ground up, but I had no idea what coriander seed was. It was white, and its taste was like wafers with honey. So that's the institution. That's what happened when the children of Israel came out of Egypt, journeyed into the wilderness, and God provided bread and meat for them. And there are a number of lessons that we can learn from what we read here. The first way that we're going to look at what happened was we're going to just use what we can know by sight. We're just going to think about what we can observe. And that's important because we live in a world that we can observe. So the first thing they knew by sight was they were hungry. They had been traveling for a month. And as I say, they had probably exhausted whatever food they took with them. This is a large group of people moving through an area that is not particularly hospitable. There probably wasn't much food for them to forage. So these people were hungry. Now they knew that because they could see it. They understood what this was all about. The second thing that they knew by sight was, this stuff is pretty good. Tastes like wafers and honey. It's nourishing. This is something that we can use. We can bake it. We can boil it. We can do whatever we want to with it. And I'm sure that there were different ways to prepare it. They could eat the quail that came up in the evening. So by sight, they knew, hey, I'm hungry. This, whatever this is, they eventually call it manna. This manna is pretty good stuff. We can eat this. Now, understand, they have never seen this before. They're traveling in a wilderness area, and suddenly, in spite of the fact that they've not been able to find food up to this point, there is now food that's available to them. So what else do they know by sight? I'm really hungry. I need to gather surplus. Have you ever been hungry like that? I've never gone without food. It's probably pretty apparent that I've not gone without food, but when you've gone without food for at least a certain amount of time, when the food becomes available, the first thing that you do is you gather a surplus. You need a ready supply of food. They exhausted what was available. Now this food is available, so by sight, just by what you know, you gather extra. That makes sense. Sometimes you would even hoard the extra. And that probably makes sense as well. Next thing they knew was, I need to stay here. Think about that for a minute. I've been traveling for a month. There's a food shortage back there behind me. I get to this point, and suddenly there are quail and there is manna. Now, maybe I somehow accidentally stumbled into the flight pattern of quail. Maybe there's a migration that takes place through this place. Maybe this is some sort of an odd phenomenon that happens in this place, and this manna is something that just it appears because of where we are. And I understand that scientists, as they looked at this area, have seen places where there's something like this that occurs. So if I was just looking at this using what I can observe, I would stay here. I'm not going to leave this place because I didn't have food before. I get here, I don't know where it came from, but I have food in this place. So I'm not going to go anywhere beyond this. And that's, of course, leading us to the biggest mistake that they made, and It's what's called a Bayesian error. And here I get to fall back on being a scientist. A Bayesian approach to understanding the world says, my experience informs my decisions about what the probability is that an event is going to occur tomorrow. Put it this way. I'm a little kid, and I have never seen the sun go down. First time the sun goes down, my reaction is, oh no, there's no more sun. But it comes up the next day, and I think, oh great, the sun is back. Now, that's all that I know. I have one day's experience. But the second time that this happens, I have another day's experience. The third time, I have a third day's experience. This is not the way that a dog goes through life. Have you ever thought about that? Every time you go away, the dog is amazed that you came back. It just can't quite understand that. Dogs don't have Bayesian reasoning. But we do. So these people fell prey to the Bayesian error. 6 days they got up and there was manna on the ground, and they thought, I'm going to get up on the seventh day and there will be manna on the ground. So at least some of them went out to gather manna on the seventh day. That's the Bayesian error. If it makes sense, if you're thinking about it from an observant perspective, just what you can see and what your experience has been, that makes sense. 6 days I've gone out in the morning and there was manna on the ground. It's probably going to be that way on the seventh day. Now, we know from reading the story that they were wrong. There wasn't any manna on the seventh day. They had been given some instructions, but they didn't listen to that, because we're just thinking about people that live in the physical world, what they can know by what they can see. Now, let it also be said that we can benefit from what we know by faith. Right? God had given them some extra information beyond what they knew from what they could observe. Doesn't say that what they observed wasn't of any value. It just says God gave them better information, and they could combine the faith information with what they knew from observation, and they would have a better way to live. First thing that God said was, I'm the one who put it there. Remember, they've never seen manna before. How do they know where that came from? Well, God has to tell them. That's the only way that they're going to know the source of the manna, because separate from that, they have no way of knowing what the source is. Next thing, God tells them that I will continue to give it to you. You don't need to go out and gather a surplus. In fact, if you gather a surplus, it's just going to rot. It'll get worms in it. So don't gather a surplus. I will continue to provide it. Every day, you can rest assured that God is going to provide. That's not something that they could know from observation. They had to learn that because God told them that. I'm the one who put it here, and I'll put it here tomorrow. So I can rest assured that God is going to take care of me. Now, that's a pretty important lesson for us to learn, too. I don't need to be worried about gathering a surplus, because God's going to take care of that. God has my back, and that's a wonderful thing to understand. So the next thing that they understand is that you only need to gather enough. You don't need to worry about getting too much. And that too is a behavior contrast. The behavior that results from observation is not like the behavior that results if you have faith.
or if you have the revelation from God. So when I have observation plus faith, I have a certain kind of behavior. And the behavior that that produces is not like the behavior that you get if you're relying only on what you can know by sight. Make sense? Next thing. Continue your journey. Another behavior contrast. Remember what we said at the beginning? If I've been journeying for a month, then I'm going through a place where there's food shortage, and I get to a place where suddenly there is food, and I don't know where it came from, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but I have some indication that it's at least in this place. I'm going to stay there. I'm not leaving this place. This is a place where I can eat. Again, God has given them the information that lets them continue on their journey. You go, I'll keep providing it. This behavior that comes from knowing things only by sight is different than the behavior that comes from knowing things that God has given us plus what we know by sight. So it's a wonderful thing to understand where manna comes from, isn't it? It's a blessing. And it produces a kind of behavior that's very different than the kind of behavior that you get when you only look at things by sight. So, let's think about that in terms of the Christian and the Christian's conviction about the things that we know by sight and the things that we know by revelation. They don't contradict each other. They fit together. And they are the embodiment of all truth. So many people are trying to go through life with only part of the truth. They're only looking at what they can know by sight. Well, let's think about this in terms of Jesus and in terms of what happened to him. By sight, I know that Jesus came here. There were people that interacted, well, I don't know that, but there were people that interacted with him that knew that Jesus was here. He was a real man. He walked, he talked, you could touch him. You could listen to what he was saying, but Jesus was a real man. There were people that also knew that Jesus had been crucified. That's something you know by sight. There were three men that were crucified that day. Jesus and two thieves. They knew that Jesus had been crucified. They knew that Jesus had arisen from the dead. There was an empty tomb. They could go to that empty tomb and they could be assured that he was not there. That's sight knowledge. That's observation knowledge. And they could also be assured that he had ascended, that he'd left the earth. He went up. Now they don't know exactly where he went, but they know that he went up. So in terms of sight knowledge, when we talk about Christians, we're talking about knowing that Jesus lived, that he died, that he rose again from the dead, and that he ascended. We know those four things about Jesus. That's just sight knowledge. And when the apostle talks about his preaching, look at how he begins in 1 Corinthians, the second chapter. I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellence of speech or wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God. I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified. That's the beginning point. Sight knowledge. That's where everything begins. 1 Corinthians the 15th chapter, beginning at verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel that I preached unto you, which you believed, or which you received, and wherein you stand. by which also you're saved, if you keep in memory what I preached unto you, unless you believed in vain. Now we're going to talk about adding some things to what they knew by sight, but he says, in the beginning, that's what I preached. I delivered to you, first of all, that which I'd also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that He was buried, that He rose again the third day according to the Scriptures. He was seen of Cephas, then of the 12. After that, He was seen of above 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain unto the present, but some are fallen asleep. After that, He was seen by James, then all of the apostles, and last of all, He was seen by me also as one born out of due time. So those are observables about Jesus. But just like Moses had to give them extra information that God would reveal, remember, I'm the provider, I'll keep giving it to you, so trust me. We get information, we get extra information about Jesus, and the extra information is about what that meant. We know He died. How do we know the importance of His death? Well, 1 Corinthians, this time in the second chapter at verse 6 beginning, we continue the reading that we began in the first place. He says, we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of the world, nor of the princes of this world that comes to naught. We speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world had known, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Son of the Lord of glory, as it is written. This is important. Eye has not seen, neither ear heard, neither has entered into the heart of man the things that God prepared for them that love Him. But God revealed them unto us by His Spirit. For, He says, the Spirit searches all things, yea, the deep things of God. What man knows the things of a man, save the spirit of a man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man, but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, not just what we know by sight. Okay? We know that. We have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, because man's wisdom can't teach those things. You can't, by observation, determine those things. You can only know those things because God explained it. Just like you didn't know where manna came from, the only way you know that is because God said, I'm the one that provided it. So he continues. He says, we compare spiritual things with spiritual words. The natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God. They're foolishness to him. Neither can he know them because they're spiritually discerned. He that is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. Who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? We have the mind of Christ. What a blessing it is to have the whole picture, to be able to walk by faith, to have this behavior that comes from this marvelous expanded knowledge that so many of the people in the world don't have, because they try to understand the world based on what they can see. They don't think about the fact that there's something beyond the sun. They restrict their vision too much. Romans, the 14th chapter, beginning at verse 9. To this end, Christ died and rose and revived, that he might be the Lord both of the dead and of the living. This is why all of the things that you observed happened. That's the part that you couldn't know just by observation. So what does that mean to us? It gives us a confidence, this marvelous confidence that we see the whole picture. We know about what we can see. Everybody knows about what we can see, but we also know about the things that we can't see. And that's what's so important. Now we get to place trust in some things that are absolutely as reliable as the things that we can see. Why didn't some people go out and try to gather manna on the Sabbath? Because God said it's not going to be there. He's the one that put it there. He said it's not going to be there. So don't make the Bayesian error that everybody else is making. You have the whole picture. Romans, the fourth chapter at verse 3. You see the record of Abraham. Abraham was given a promise by God. And it was a promise that, as far as Abraham could tell, was not going to happen. Abraham is an old man. God has told Abraham, I'm going to give you a son. Now, this is just, he's 90 years old. It's not going to happen if you rely on what you can know. But Romans, the fourth chapter at verse 3, the record says Abraham believed God and it was accounted to him for righteousness. That's the key. He had the whole picture. In verse 20, beginning, he staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully persuaded that what he had promised, he was also able to perform, and therefore it was imputed to him for righteousness. 1 Peter, the fourth chapter, and at verse 19, therefore, these also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls as unto a faithful Creator in doing what is right. So it's behavior that comes from having the whole picture. Why was Abraham willing to leave his place and to go to a place that God said to go to, not even knowing where it was? Because he believed God. There was in Abraham's mind a clear conviction of things that he couldn't see. He could see all the way around that bend, couldn't he? Because God gave him the information that he needed. That's what it means to be able to walk by faith, not by sight. In 1 Corinthians, the fourth chapter, at verse 1, the apostle says that we get to become faithful stewards. Let a man regard us in this manner as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that we be found trustworthy. So we can be trustworthy messengers of the wonderful news that there's more to this life than just what we can see. What a grand thing. And what a sad thing for people who can only rely on the things that they can see. What a sad outcome. In Romans, the second chapter, beginning at verse 10, the apostle says, our glory and honor and peace to everyone who does good, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. There is no partiality with God. Those who have sinned without the law, without the law will also be... I think I mistakenly printed something here. Those who have sinned without the law will also perish with the law. And those who have sinned under the law will be judged by the law. Not the hearers of the law who are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. So it's not just knowing the extra information, but it's acting on it.
Isn't it a blessing to live by faith, not by sight? I'm so thrilled that I get to do that. And what it means is when we come to the point where the physical intersects with the spiritual, most of the time it's at the point of death. We don't have to sorrow as other people that have no hope. But we can, in fact, approach God. Now, I hope that helps you live your life. I hope that speaks to the real significance of being a Christian. That's what it's all about. If you're not a Christian, become one. If you are a Christian, live like one. Don't go out and gather manna. Try to gather manna on the Sabbath day. It's not going to be there. You know some things by sight. Jesus did die. He did go into the grave. He did come out of that grave. And by God, you know why that happened. And that's just as important as knowing that it did happen. So we're going to stand in just a minute. We're going to sing a song together. It's an opportunity to think about the things that we know from God. It's an opportunity to think about the kind of life that we want to live. It's an opportunity to find some help to live that life. Won't you think about it? If there's something we can do to help you, that's why we're here. Let's all consider it while we stand and sing.